This podcast is from the IDPF Digital Book 2012 Conference at Book Expo America.
I'm Andrew Weinstein. I will be moderating, which means I get to introduce our guests and manage the question session afterwards. We're very fortunate to have Evan St. Leifer, Vice President of Digital Initiatives at Scholastic Library Publishing. He'll be up first, and following Evan will be Ken Brooks, Senior Vice President of Global Production and Manufacturing at Cengage Learning. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew. Welcome, everybody. How are we all doing? Energy? You have some energy? Hit the Starbucks stand? We all good? I'm Scholastic. I'm K-12. I'm supposed to be the fun part of this, so not that Ken's not going to be fun. That's why we're going this logical order. In order to get to college, you have to go through K-12, right? So so that's actually kind of funny, but it's also somewhat serious. I just wanted to try to get an idea of who is in the room. Should I assume, just by raising your hand, mostly trade publishers? Yes? Only a couple. Okay. Educational publishers? Technology companies, quasi delivery, distribution? Okay. That's about it. Favorite color is red? No, okay. The reason why I wanted to ask that was I have a ton of slides. I got a lot of data that I'm going to be posting for your benefit, because I think there's some good analysis in that that you can pore over and digest. You know, what am I bringing to the table? What I bring to the table is the fact that I've been at Scholastic for 7 years plus, and I've had the real experience and the benefit, and I've been really blessed to have seen learning through several different angles. What do I mean by that? What I mean is that I've done early childhood with Scholastic. I've done out-of-school time, which is the new and emerging. It's not so new, but it's emerging and changing way that students are learning in districts and homeschool and before school and after school. It's now called extended learning. It's a big initiative. Federal funding gets $1 billion. I've done classroom, library. So I've had a really interesting vantage point. So what I bring here today is a question about how we want to approach learning, and I can give you some insights into that. So just to get started, you know, the title said ebook, so I wanted to make sure I mentioned that, you know, in terms of the program in the presentation. So I mentioned the word ebooks, but I guess what I'm going to throw out there, and I have 15 minutes, so I'm going to throw out some deep thoughts, some provocative thoughts that I hope will make you think, and then you'll see the data. So basically, do we really mean ebooks, or do we mean something else? Because I'm hearing a lot, and you know, as I listen to sessions here and the sessions that to come in the next couple of days, we talk a lot about taking fundamentally the essence of a book, the essence of that in the format, and then adding things to it. So here's my question that I think I'm going to ask you all. Do we believe that this new paradigm shift in the way we are receiving and communicating with mobile, et cetera, do we believe that that is a new distribution model for our existing products, give or take a few bells and whistles? Or do we believe authentically that that's a new content form where maybe as publishers of content and as distributors of content, but really to the content creators first, do we believe that we actually need to be rethinking that content? So maybe the book does not come first. Maybe in this new world and paradigm, are we ready to believe that maybe something called an app comes first? And it's funny, I've heard some people say the term book app. It kind of reminds me of like, are we going to go see like a book movie? You guys get that? In other words, a different format. And so my point is that, well, maybe it shouldn't just be a book. Maybe there's content around a scientist that's excavating things in Africa, and maybe there's a book about that, but maybe the app is totally different where it's actually communicating with science in the field, and that's the app, and children get the benefit of seeing some sort of more real-time or authentic communication with scientists day-to-day. I'm making this up, but my point to you is, do we believe there's and do we have the courage, and is there a business model that can speak to this that we believe we can create that's going to allow us to rethink what we do with our content? I just want to get that out there. I need to get that off my chest. Okay. So do I hit the down arrow, right? Okay. So apps, transmedia, what are our expectations? So I'm just going to give you a quick landscape for school because I have like 8 minutes left. That's how fast these things go. No, it's good. I'm happy, Andrew. It's fine. So has anyone heard of Common Core? Raise your hand, please. Wow, I am impressed. Okay, so Common Core really is the new No Child Left Behind, right? We know that's where everything is going. So in essence, I'm going to show you some things around Common Core, and I'm going to give you some of the basic undergirding, the basic pieces of Common Core, in case you don't know that already. So anything we do now has to support Common Core. It has to support struggling readers. I heard someone ask a question if the content in the last presentation or the formatting actually supports ESL readers and learners, and the answer was yes. The fact is that school districts across the country have a preponderance of struggling readers. This kind of runs counter to Common Core. Okay, because Common Core, just as an FYI, and I'm sorry if I'm saying some things that you may know, but I just want to be sure that you're aware of this. Let's take an 11th grade required reading title. Let's take, I'm going to make one up, if, you know, The Hobbit, let's just say, okay? If The Hobbit was required reading in 11th grade for most children, that now has been pushed down to 9th grade. So just so you know what's happening is we have additional complexity. We have things like point of view, which I'll get into. We have other more sophisticated, it's all well-intentioned, it's all good stuff, knowledge construction, synthesis, but it's being pushed down at a time when we have more struggling readers and more failure in our largest school districts than ever before. So that's the new reality, is Common Core. Everything we do is predicated around that. Now, it's interesting because if you're a nonfiction producer, this creates exceptional opportunity right off the bat. However, it's not only the only thing. You can still create multiple text types and have fiction and poems. There's many, many ways that your content, can support Common Core. It just needs to be mapped that way so that instructors and teachers in schools can find it and that it can do some things, and it maps to what's called the reading exemplar. So here are just some basic points about Common Core: align with college and work expectations. The content must be rigorous and have an application of knowledge through higher order skills, as I was alluding to, synthesis, knowledge construction. The core content standards, state by state, are still going to be there, okay? And Common Core is not expected to teach teachers how to teach. It's telling them end games, outcomes, what kids need to be good at, what kids need to be able to learn. It's not telling teachers this is how you do it. So that's a little clue for all of you. If you give teachers guideposts, if you give teachers, instructors with your products, again, a roadmap for how to be successful with Common Core, then you're starting to move into a real promising area. We'll get into the top performing countries piece because you may or may not know how dismal we are, our education performance versus other countries. And it must be evidence-based and research-based. So I'm going to post this, and this isn't the most exciting slide in the world. In fact, it's probably like the most boring slide you'll see like the entire time you're at BEA. But the fact is I wanted to show you this for a reason. It shows you the different types of assets that are part of the text exemplars. Does everyone know what the text exemplars are in Common Core? Yes? No? Okay. So you should definitely take this down in case I haven't, it's not on a slide somewhere. There's something called Appendix B. So if you Google Common Core Appendix B, you will see a list from K spanning to 12 of what they call the exemplars of reading. These are the examples of the types of reading and what those reading exemplars are supposed to be able to accomplish and what children should be able to do with those. Now, those are just exemplars. They're just for English language arts right now. They don't yet exist for science. I think math is coming. I see Sue Bartle back there. Sue, math is coming, right? But it's in the works, right. And science is not there yet. So this is all going to be happening. But the point is, as you can see, I wanted to show you different types of texts. This is all extremely important, and this is part of the exemplar list for Common Core. How much time do I have, Andrew? 4 minutes. Okay. So the other thing that I think is important, and I'm going to fly in like a minute, is that, because I have like 40 slides left, is that you should definitely keep your eye and stay informed about the Common Core assessments that are coming in 2014 in most states. What does this exactly mean? What this means is that, like No Child Left Behind to some degree, school districts are going to be required to demonstrate students' mastery of Common Core standards, of skills that have to do with point of view, of skills that have to do with turning knowledge into information, of skills that have to do with knowledge construction, narrative, things like that. So it's fairly sophisticated. There are going to have to be assessments developed. We think there's probably going to be a big hue and cry, and I'm trying to be diplomatic here. It could be ugly, I mean, as you can see from my slide. So, but that creates opportunity. That gives us, in the content world, an opportunity to help schools, to help educators come up with really important ways on how to help, you know, get kids prepared for assessments. This is just an example of a Scholastic product. I just took it's a product, and you'll see it when you get to it, when you look at it after the fact. Just different assets. What I did was I mapped out the different types of assets that are helpful for Common Core. So everything from animation to poems to maps to news stories to actual news items that are in a database or articles, book passages. So this is important for you to know that there's a full span of different multiple text types that need to be mapped to the different exemplars that you find in Common Core. The landscape, I'm just going to fly through this. There's different trajectories. So I'm just going to, you're going to see this when you look at the presentation after the fact. This is just some of this you know, some of this you may not know. So just these are some guide points about the different types of at age ranges and what the capacities are as of children. So I'm just going through this. You see 0 to 2, 2 to 3, 3 to 5, elementary school years, receptive language, expressive and receptive languages, all ties together. I wanted to show you this as a progressive way so you can see how things need to be built. I thought it would be important for you to see this. Middle school years. Just these are really important things, how things build. So that's why this is so crucial. We need to help children progressively as they move along, or else they lose vital competencies and vocabulary if they're not starting on the right foot early on. You can see how it all builds. So I'm just flying through this. So it all rolls back to global competitiveness. And there's a minority gap, and this is where the big picture is of how we in the content community can help the education world. There's rampant failure. We are way behind. Our children of color in cities across the country are chronically behind. So this is the condition that you need to be aware of, that there's a struggling, a preponderance of struggling readers and learners in our largest districts. They're failing in many rates higher than other children. We have major problems with our national test scores, and this is not going to change with Common Core unless we develop the right accessible content that helps them build the things that I discussed earlier. This all comes from Harvard Business Review, by the way. All this. Where we rank, we're way behind nations, and what I wanted to show you was in reading and math, 24th in reading, 32nd in math versus other countries. So you have to understand that we are so far behind, so you can do AP, Some of you have great content to do for the AP kids. That's great, and there's definitely a market continuing for that. But there's a really big market coming for everybody else and what's going on with Common Core. So I'm just going to there's a bunch of trends. I have like 1 minute, right, David? Less than a minute. Okay. So these are just trends that you're going to see around apps and as well as learning trends. And so I'm trying to do is get really to the learning trends. Here you go. So when you get a chance, when you get it after the fact, you can look this up. You'll see trends on educators. You'll be informed by this. This tells you educators' propensity to want to use digital resources and in what context. Okay? So you'll be interested in this. Different. That's to get your attention. Ew. But see, kids love this stuff. We got to get the kids excited. That's the point. Anyway, so there's a lot more things on reading trends that I won't get to because we only have a. That's it. And we need to make sure my colleague gets some time. So if there are any questions after, we'll do it that. You're going to ask a question now anyway. Yes. Well,
IDPF will post this on after the show on the IDPF website. I think all the presentations from the tracks will be available.
And it's good stuff. It's just a lot. I don't have enough time. Questions after. Thank you.
Well, I think that's going to be a pretty difficult act to follow. And mine's going to be much more kind of schematic in structure. So I'm Ken Brooks. I'm the Senior Vice President of Global Production Manufacturing Services at Cengage Learning. I've been involved in e-books and e-reading and distribution of digital content for a good number of years. I came into education 5 or 6 years ago from trade publishing. And when I was talking to Bill McCoy about what this session ought to be, we were talking about how BEA is largely a trade-oriented show and how excuse me, all of the discussions about what e-books were kind of missed the point when we're looking at it, you know, from a higher ed perspective. So thank you for having everybody raise their hand, and it turns out that my presentation is entirely miscast for an audience that knows what I'm talking about. So so feel free to correct me as we go through this. Some of the differences that you see between trade e-books and higher ed e-books and platforms really are based on the different missions of the content. The higher ed e-book, e-textbook, or learning platform is really focused on students and professors and their respective workflows. Students to learn, professors to teach, actually institutions to prove their value to either accrediting bodies or to the parents that are sending their children to those institutions. And that is a significant difference. So what you'll see in an e-textbook is that it's not so much about the content anymore. The content's important, but really what you see is it's a collection of content, tools, and how it relates to the environment of the learning management system and the student information systems that are in the institutions. it's really important to look at the shift as a move towards a learning platform. As long as we're kind of stuck in the old world of books, or think about textbooks, instructor manuals, ancillaries, digital ancillaries, we're kind of missing the point that it really is around workflows and how to attain those educational outcomes that we're looking for. Okay. So at Cengage, we've been thinking about this for quite a while. Most of the higher education publishers have. We've got a perspective on it. I'll be talking about that in a moment. What I'd like to do is basically take the framework within which we're thinking of this, use some examples from some of the different platforms that are out there. If you've been in the education track for the last couple of days, or yesterday. It seems like a long, it's been a long week. You will have seen the presentation by Nature Publishing Group with that Principles of Biology. I think that's a really good example of this kind of thing that I'm talking about here. Okay, so at the highest level, a digital textbook or a learning platform is really going to consist of a collection of products and services and the interfaces to the surrounding platforms. Here, on the left, you see content. This is traditional learning content. It's readings, case studies, interactive and rich media content. I'll be talking more about that in a moment. Next is functions and tools. So this would be, I think of highlighting, annotating, note-taking, excerpting as some of the main components, but it also includes things like flashcards and other kind of general tools, as well as discipline-specific tools. So like language labs for language learning versus simulations for chemistry or biology. External tools, really no provider is going to be able to give uniformly high-quality tools and content across all the different disciplines. For example, it would be very difficult to take that Principles of Biology and turn that into a history platform. You'd have to change quite a bit to it. So what we've done is we've identified or realized that there are general tools like note-taking and all this and discipline-specific tools as well. So that's where some of the partner plays come into this. Also some things like lecture capture. And then finally, down at the bottom is the platform and infrastructure. And these are things that I find interesting but are really kind of like the dirty fingernail stuff behind the whole system that makes it work. It's taxonomies, it's markup, it's APIs, text-to-speech, platform capabilities, things like that. So jumping into content. Content these days goes way beyond the narrative and images found in traditional textbooks, and they can really take just a variety of different forms. It can be anywhere from specific readings to access to databases. Next down is interactive learning objects. One of the big difficulties is, of course, that most of the interactive learning objects that the higher ed publishers have been working on for the last however many years are flash-based. And, of course, that doesn't play extremely well with the Apple products. So that's one of our current challenges. You could think of interactive learning objects as being compiled assessment, although I would tend to, if you tear it apart and deal with it as QTI, it's really more narrative than it is interactive. Clearly, there's rich media, audio, video, notes. Can really be user-developed material. Works in a variety of different ways. It's either notes that you're capturing on your own. It's notes that are being shared. Kind of goes across the continuum into group learning. And then finally, I've got links down here. In the more rudimentary platforms, this is links out to data sets or external references or things like that. As LTI and some of the other standards evolve, you'll be able to bring these things directly into the learning experience. So let's see some examples of some of these things. I'm not going to play this video, but you'd see here like the video on the right hand side would be like interactive graphing. Some of the Wolfram tools, the computational data format tools, look very, very interesting. As a way to teach people how these things work, like min-max curves and supply-demand curves. Video, I think, is becoming increasingly important as a pedagogical device. If you look at Khan Academy or Udacity, they make very effective use of very short video segments interspersed with quizzes to make sure that you stay engaged with material. I've been taking just so I can take some of my own medicine. I've been taking one of the Udacity courses, and I've got a few examples in here. I found that to be particularly for someone that's been out of school for a long, long time. I found it to be a pretty interesting way to get back into the head of a student So, next, functions and tools. The most important piece here, I think, up at the top, is this learning path. You can think of it maybe as a it's like a directed graph through the knowledge of the discipline, so that as somebody goes through the course, they go from what they don't know to what they do know throughout the either the entire course of study or a particular particular section. Khan Academy, if you've been on the site, has a pretty interesting knowledge map that shows how you would progress through a math, you know, how you would progress through understanding math. I find that to be pretty pretty interesting. This is where you would tend to see things like adaptive learning paths built, so that the assessment would drive you into what you needed to learn next, and then you'd move on to different different other learning objects. Content management is where either the student or the professor would add material into the curriculum. General study tools, we talked a little bit about those. Discipline-specific study tools, again, that's going to be very much driven by the practitioners in the particular discipline, so chemistry labs, online dissection for biology labs, things like that. You wouldn't tend to see those cross over significantly. Assessment is very obvious, although that needs to very tightly link into the content. And if it's for a grade, it needs to link into the grade book and the grading tools. I'll talk about group learning here more in a moment. So, and these blue blocks in here are external tools that are incorporated into the platform. So grading tools, grade book, calendar, all of this sort of thing. Every learning platform is going to have at least a rudimentary form of these things, but very seldom will a learning platform be world-class in all of them. So you need the ability to pull things in from external providers. So I mentioned the learning path. This could be as simple, the appearance could be as simple as, you know, like a syllabus. So here's what we're going to study. It could be that directed graph that I had up there before. So there are multiple views of this. This is where a student goes or a professor goes to really personalize the experience for the class. Now, note-taking. This is an important part of any learning experience. What you see here on the left is an extract of a screenshot I took from one of the learning platforms, just to illustrate how you'd click on something and type in a note. On the right is Evernote, which is a very useful general note-taking tool that many students are using these days in preference to some of the platform-specific tools. This one happens to represent, I was trying to understand how web applications work, so I was taking some code fragments out of a from the Udacity course I mentioned and pulling it out into my own notebook. This eventually leads to note sharing and group learning. Do you remember the scene in The Social Network where Mark Zuckerberg demonstrates how he crowdsources art criticism? Remember, he had this homework assignment or something where he had to write up 4 paintings, and so he said, you know, I don't know anything about this, so he posted them and got all the comments in, and that's what he turned in as his solution. Now, it depends on what the ethics are for the particular class as to whether that's, you know, effectively learning, effective group learning or cheating. But I'll bet you he did actually learn quite a bit about those paintings by doing it that way. So on the left is a screenshot, again, from the Udacity course about how you would ask a question. Students were motivated to answer those questions, and it actually turned into a fairly effective learning technique, which is necessary when you have a course that has, you know, 90,000 students in it. You can't really get any of the professor or the TA's time, so the other students have to pitch in. All right. So this brings us to partner tools and services. There are really two issues here. There are very few institutions where it wouldn't be necessary to integrate into an LMS, and this shows up here. And there are no examples of any publisher tool that is uniformly high-quality, excellent tools across the entire range. So it's important to be able to pull in things like lecture capture, information from the campus system, online tutoring. In a student interface, I apologize for the blurry picture here, but this is how it might look in a student interface. You've got your main learning space over here, and on the right you've got the icons that call in, say, Google Docs or Evernote or something like that as a as an application that you'd use. Okay, and the last piece, and one of my favorites, is the platform and infrastructure stuff. We talked about taxonomies as the way you would link a lot of material together. Markup is key. It needs to work together. However, most publishers that have been around for a while and have different kinds of content tend to have their content in a variety of different markups, so there needs to be a way to synchronize that. Public APIs are critical if you want to operate, and they need to be standards-based. And then finally, down at the bottom, there's also the user and session tracking, permissions, so who has access to what, who can change the curriculum, who can access grades, data analytics, text-to-speech engines and such. Okay. By taxonomies, here's an example of an economics taxonomy. You basically take the main concepts in the discipline, and then you just keep drilling down. And then you go through and you tag all of your assets and all of your questions with the appropriate level of the taxonomy. That way, when you're looking for an example, quadratic equations, not that it's up here, how do you solve quadratic equations? You can pull in all of your learning objects that deal with that, whether they be interactive, videos, questions, or what have you. One last important concept is that learning can happen anytime, anywhere. This is a particularly antique illustration. You can tell by the fact that I called it a slate and not a tablet. But it illustrates the point that you need to be able to distribute this content and interact with students and professors on a variety of different devices. Okay, so let's put it all together. This is the overall slide showing all the different pieces. Students and instructors need to be able to customize their material. You need a library view so that you can see what is going on. Learning will happen anytime, anywhere. Need to be able to access multimedia content, text-to-speech tools. Instructors need to be able to assess student comprehension and engagement, on and on. So it really is a platform these days as opposed to just an ebook. That is pretty much it for my prepared comments. I'll kind of walk through the framework. I gave you some illustrations. I think it's really important that we begin to think about learning platforms and textbooks in this manner, learning materials in this manner, so that we really can achieve the outcomes that we're looking for. So thank you.
I know it's a pain to stand up, but if there are questions, there is a microphone that I have replaced the battery in. I confirmed it's working, and if you have questions for either one of them, it really helps us out to use the microphone so everybody can hear. Questions for either Ken or Evan?
Ken, where does get into that?
It's George. Okay.
Yeah, but I'm going to show it on the slide. Or illustrate it on the slide. EPUB fits into the narrative section up in the upper left-hand corner. EPUB 3 now has the capability to incorporate interactive assessment. But the key piece here is that it has to be linked to the server side. Otherwise, you can't really capture a lot of progress and get it out to the learning management system. So that's how I view it. Now, there's some other standards that are really important. QTI, quizzing and test, question and test. I don't remember what it stands for. I just call it QTI, is important with its corollary APIB standard for portability and accessibility. So those are important. Common cartridge is important so you can move content into different learning management systems. And LTI, or the Learning Tools Interface, is also important so that you can have different pieces of different platforms operate smoothly together. Good question.
Okay, if there's nothing else, thank you very much for coming.